And now, the show that's all about baseball.
That's when the game, to me, is at its best.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, and Window World.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Little floater towards center field. That's going to drop down for a base hit. Here comes Arise. He is rounding. He is diving into home plate. The Twins win it on a walk-off single. And that will end the Red Sox winning streak at 9 in a row. The Red Sox take the series. They lose here today by a final score of 4-3 on a loop single by Max Kepler in the bottom of the ninth inning.
It's a heartbreaker, Murray. A heartbreaker. 4-3, your final today in Minnesota. The Red Sox lose to the Twins. Minnesota salvages one game in the series out of the four. Red Sox take 3 out of 4. So here's the question. Do you still feel good about the Red Sox with the way that game went today, or does that take any of the air out of the balloon? And I would tell you, believe it or not, I have a hard time giving them grief for this loss. Boy, they are a really likable team right now, and on some level it pains me to say that, because Murray, I have spent my life, like many Bostonians, getting accustomed to the fact that the Red Sox were going to let me down and ripping them to pieces.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
It was a tradition here, it was a birthright, for crying out loud, for people who grew up when I did. People who grew up in this millennium feel differently because they started winning championships, but ingrained is that the Red Sox were always going to let you down at some point.
It's inherent, Maz. I'm convinced part of what sent my mother to an early grave.
But this team this year, this team hasn't let me down. Well, I take that back. First three games, they let me down. Yeah. Since that time, they really haven't let me down, even with today's loss. So that's where we will begin, 617-779-0985. We are only with you until 6:30 this evening, and then we will turn it over to Bruins pregame. That'll take you right into the Bruins and the New York Islanders, which will then take you into the Celtics and the Lakers, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Is that how they're going to do it again, Jimmy, just as we did on Tuesday?
Yes, sir.
So you get all kinds of programming here on 98.5 tonight, and you don't want to miss it. I will say this. First of all, with regard to the loss today, the Red Sox were down 3-0 in the eighth. They had done nothing the entire game. Michael Pineda, pitching for the Twins today, 7 scoreless, 2 hits, 1 walk, dominated the game. And if you saw him on the mound, you would wonder how a man that fat could dominate a lineup the way he did. Michael Pineda is huge. Huge. The guy is freaking gigantic.
Social media was abuzz that he might have had a foreign substance in his beard, which he kept touching before his pitches.
Okay, so if you remember Pineda a few years back, and this goes all the way back to when John Farrell was a manager, took the mound in Fenway with pine tar on his neck, to the point where the Red Sox went out and, you know, Farrell went to the mound and said, "This is like he's rubbing our faces in it. We have to call him on it." And Pineda was ejected from the game. I'm now starting to wonder if it wasn't pine tar in his neck, if it was duck sauce, because he is huge. He is freaking gigantic. Holy mackerel. What happened to him? The guy's a whale. Wow, is he big. Holy smokes. Gigantic. In any case, Alex Cora wasn't upset about the loss either. He was asked about the heartbreaking nature of the defeat after the game, and listen to what he said.
I don't think it was a tough game at all, to be honest with you. You know, we came back. We were down 3-0, and we did everything possible to win that game. So the tough part, I don't agree with you. We ended up losing a game, and, you know, with a jam shot to center field. That's not bad. We just beat the American League Central champions 3 out of 4. So, I mean, we've been playing good baseball. We're down 3-0. We put good at-bats. We tie the game. They ended up winning the game, but, it's just another game. We didn't play great overall, but we did everything possible to win the game, and that's what we take out of this one.
And again, I think there is a lot to take out of this game. And if you didn't see it, and many of you didn't, let me just tell you what happened in the eighth inning. Again, to that point, 3-0 Twins, the Red Sox really had not mounted any sort of threat in the game. Anything that I would deem a significant threat in the game. And let me also just tell you that as has been the case all week, yeah, I'm trying to keep an eye on the game and trying to do the show with Mike and Murray and Jimmy and Billy, and we're trying to. So there's stuff that I missed. So if they threatened in the early innings, I missed it, but it didn't really feel like they did. So the Red Sox get to the eighth. They end up loading the bases with two outs. Alex Verdugo, again, comes up. Alex Verdugo falls behind 0-2 to a lefty. The Twins brought a lefty into the game to face Verdugo. Verdugo fell behind 0-2 in the count. It was Rogers who came in to pitch to him. And Verdugo fought the at-bat to 10 pitches. 10 pitches, and on the 10th pitch, a fastball that I would say was on the outer half, he rifled a double into the left field's corner, scored three runs, and they tied the game. Now, remember, Verdugo also had a big hit yesterday in the nightcap after making a game-saving catch in the first game on the final play of the game. So he has been all over the field here in the last couple of days and been an absolute force to deal with for the Red Sox. So we're going to ask Jared Karabas about him when Jared joins us in the next segment. And we'll get to some other things, too, because Alex Cora was ejected in this game. He had an opportunity maybe to pinch hit J.D. Martinez, who did not play today, elected not to do so. I can't help but wonder if the Red Sox missed a chance there to score a run and take a lead, or certainly at least tie the game. So that is something to look at. And also there's this fact, which crossed my mind today as I was driving in. There's something about a 10-game winning streak that to me always feels like some sort of threshold that you cross. And so I started thinking to myself last night, boy, I bet you if you went back and looked, if the Red Sox extend this thing to 10 games, I bet you we'll find that in most of those years they were a playoff team or maybe even threatened for a championship. I bet you we'll find that out. So I looked it up today. Since 1960 now, the Red Sox have had three winning streaks of 12 games or more. They've had three winning streaks of 12 games. They have had four others at 11 and then six at 10. So when you add that all up, 13 winning streaks, 13 seasons in which they had a 10-game winning streak. That's a better way to say it. Murray, of those 13 years in which they had a 10-game winning streak, how many of those do you think they made the playoffs?
I mean, at least 10.
10 of them. 10 out of 13. So then the question becomes, well, what does that 10th game really mean? What, the years they won nine, it didn't matter? Believe it or not, there were six years where they had a 9-game winning streak, and I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you, Murray. They only went to the playoffs once.
Hmm.
So there is something about
that. Was that somewhat recent, like the last 15 years or so?
2018.
Okay.
2018. But they also won 10 in a row in 2018. So they had two different streaks that year. So I would say that one you can even almost throw out. Of the other five teams, none of them made the playoffs, winning nine in a row.
Still, given what the expectations were for this team, and after that hideous start against Baltimore, nine's not too shabby. And even going into this game, with the way that it played out, I don't think you can feel that bad about it, given that the starting pitchers, again, Pineda against that hack Garrett Richards. The Twins likely are going to be jacked up for this game, you would think, because they don't want to get swept in four games at home. And then all of a sudden, Verdugo gives him that ridiculous at-bat in the eighth. He ties it, and it's like, holy crap, they are going to pull this off again. But whatever, Twins did what they had to do to pull it out. Either way, I don't know if you can come away from this game today and feel like, oh, that's what a bummer, that's horrible. No, this was kind of fake. Like, you can't feel that way. They showed a lot of fight. They never gave up. That's a sign of a winning team, and it's a team that's got some balls.
Yeah, I don't look at this game terribly with any sort of, real anger.
Yeah, you can.
I really don't. And which for me is relatively rare, but my expectations with the Red Sox this year were so low that I thought if they got this far in, and this is what now, 9-4, right? So I thought 13 games in, if they were 7-6, I'd be happy. I'd be happy. I might have even taken 6-7. And 9-4, having played the way they have, and really more than anything, the way they've competed. They've competed. And that at-bat by Alex Verdugo today, boy, he's a likable player. I don't like him when he talks so much. Like, I feel like he talks too much. And sometimes I feel like, good God, stop running your mouth. Just play. Because that's what you do best. You play. But, boy, you get him up in a big spot, he's the right guy. So we'll talk about that with Jared Karabas, who'll join us next. 617-779-0985 on the Baseball Hour. We'll get to your calls as well as Jared when we come back.
Fastballs, curveballs, is Breaking Balls.
Yeah.
The Baseball Hour on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub. From breaking news.
What are we doing?
To breaking balls.
They all move slow now, and they all just want to play softball.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Here's the 3-2 again. Line shot. Fair ball down the line. Arroyo is in to score. Trouble with it in the corner. Renfro is in to score.
What an at-bat. What an at-bat by Verdugo.
The Red Sox have tied up the ball game.
That was one great at-bat. I'm telling you, lefty against lefty, he fouled off some tough pitches. He took some tough pitches. He was able to hold up off some tough pitches. He gets the fastball finally and shoots it down in that left field corner. Unbelievable. Oh, and she put together a couple of games.
Quite a couple of days for Alex Verdugo. If you didn't see this at bat today, folks, you gotta find it online. Boy, what a spot to be put in. Verdugo comes up in the eighth inning, the Red Sox trailing the game against the Minnesota Twins, 3-0, bases loaded, two outs. Twins bring in a lefty to face Verdugo. He falls down 0-2. First pitch was a fastball on the outer half. He took it. Second one was a breaking ball that I would say just caught the inside part of the plate. Verdugo didn't look like he loved the call, but I thought it was a strike. And he's down 0-2. He ran it to nine pitches by fouling balls off and taking pitches that were close. That were close. 10th pitch was a fastball, middle out, because again, by that point, what's the guy's name? Is it Taylor Rogers? Who's on? Jared Karrabias has joined us, by the way. Jared, you there?
I'm here, Tony.
So did you see this at bat by Verdugo today?
You ask me if I watched the Red Sox today, Tony?
That's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, I watched the game. Yeah, I checked it out.
Okay, so there you go. And then Verdugo hits a ropes a double down the left field line. I say ropes it. Slashed a double down the left field line that tied the game at 3. The Red Sox ended up unable to get him home, but they ended up losing the game 4-3. And yet, even in defeat, I think there was a reason to look at them and feel good about them. So am I right, Jared? You feel good about them even with the loss?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I even when if you look at that game, you immediately want to, when you're dissecting a game, when you go game by game like that, you're looking for like, why did they lose? And it's like, well, you know, they battled back. There was a lot of good to take out of it. And you mentioned the Verdugo at bat and the pitches that he took. I mean, there was one pitch, I think the one that you were talking about, it was an inch or two below the strike zone. The catcher behind the plate framed it perfectly. I mean, that he brought it right back up and it looked like it could have been called either way. But yeah, you look at a game like that, you're losing 3-0 in the eighth inning. You tie the game. Verdugo has been hot. JD's out of the lineup, so you need to see some other guys step up offensively, and you get Verdugo, who is hot in that series, to carry the weight. And I mean, I'm not going to start this narrative that, oh, you can't trust Adam Ottavino, because I think one of the things that I wrote about it in the blog was, you know, if this was a playoff game, you're not rolling out Adam Ottavino in that situation. Like, we didn't see Garrett Whitlock. We didn't see Matt Barnes. He pitched a couple times in that series. So yeah, I mean, if you're gonna lose a game, I'm fine losing it in that fashion, and I'm fine losing it in that way after winning 9 straight.
So Jared, give me your overall assessment of the team so far. I mean, and try to be, you know, try not to be a homer.
Are you questioning my integrity right now, Matt?
Try to look at the
horror.
Whole,
oh my God!
Try to look at the whole 13
on the show
games.
For 2 minutes. Two minutes. Did you watch the game? And do you have the ability to assess the team in an unbiased fashion? That's what you just did.
Yep, pretty much. That's what I'm asking. Okay. Yep, that's okay. Exactly what I'm asking.
Interesting. Okay, so I am pleasantly surprised, because I even said, we had the conversation before the season started. I said, what, 89 wins, which even you thought was a little over optimistic. You said like 84. We were in the same range, but
okay, yep.
One is potential playoff. And one is, hey, good job. Nice season, I guess. So obviously, pleasantly surprised is my way of saying, like, yeah, I thought that they would have a winning record in the month of April. I didn't see them winning 9 straight games. I don't think anybody did. But when you look at why they've won the 9 straight games, what's pleasantly surprising about it? The offense was they were going to hit. And
I agree, Jared.
Yeah, the offense, they were going to be there. The bullpen has been surprising. Matt Barnes, I mean, being Craig Kimbrell 2017, that has been very surprising, but a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. Garrett Whitlock, we had the expectations, and he's lived up to that. Sawamura, he gave up the bomb to Sano today, but that was the first run he's given up since he's pitched for the Red Sox. So the bullpen has been a pleasant surprise, and I think the rotation has just been – it's been nice, you know, even if it is like what Richards did today, 5 innings. Okay, great. Two runs that weren't even earned. Love that. Martin Perez, like these guys, they're just going out there and giving you a chance to win.
Jared, what's not fluky and what might be? For example, like what you're seeing from Verdugo, both at the plate and defensively, is he one of their stud star players? The way Bobby Dalbec's spraying the ball around, he's not just swinging out of his ass, or Christian Arroyo, who's up to 6 doubles. Which of these things, or maybe something I didn't mention, like what have you seen from them that's not a fluke, and what might be?
I don't think Verdugo is a fluke. I mean, if I know no one watched the team last year, but he got MVP votes last year. He was outstanding, but I mean, no one was paying attention. He was a very good all-around player last year. Smart, intelligent baseball player. He may not know anything outside of baseball, but that's all we need him to know is baseball, and he's very good at that. But if there's going to be something fluky, maybe it is that rotation. You know, I think when we watched a guy like Martin Perez last year, he had some very good starts, and then it kind of unraveled. I mean, we're not playing 60 games this year, so there are going to be bumps in the road, and you're not going to, over the life of the 9-game winning streak, they had about a 3.5, maybe a little bit lower ERA from the rotation. Are we expecting a 3.5 from this rotation the whole way through? No. So I think that they've gotten some early good to decent starts from starters, and I wouldn't expect their rotation to have an ERA sub-4 for the whole year.
Yeah, so to me, Jared, the big thing so far is the pitching. Right. Like I'm because I like you thought that they were going to score runs. I don't know if they'll be the best offense in the league, but I think they're above average. And I think that that's playing out that way. And not only that, I think they're doing a lot of the little things, and you're seeing guys hit the ball the other way, advance runners. So I like them offensively. I think they're pretty good and they're fun to watch, which is a big part of it. The pitching to me is the question over the long haul, because they have the kind of pitchers that can pitch well for bursts. So whether it's Eovaldi or Pivetta or even Eduardo Rodriguez, and I know he had a terrific year a couple of years ago, but I need to see that with some sort of consistency before I deem him some sort of horse. So my question is whether they can sustain it. And Jared, one of the things I said, and I mean the health as much as anything, but one mm-hmm. of the things I said at the beginning of the year, they really need one guy to come out of the woodwork year. Okay? If one of those starters comes out and goes like 18-5. Okay, and I'm just giving you one wins and losses because I think that that can be a simple way to illustrate it. But if they have a guy that has that kind of season, then I think they can make the postseason. Do you agree or do you disagree?
I agree, but I don't think that's – I still think that they can make the postseason without that guy emerging because it's more of a collective effort. I don't think that you're going to have your standout guy, and if it is, it's going to be someone like Eduardo Rodriguez. Tanner Houck is another guy that I think can contribute in a big way when he's here. I know he's going on Saturday. It might get rained out tomorrow, but he's still going Saturday regardless. But I think when you mention a guy like Nathan Eovaldi, first thing that comes into question is going to be health. But – I don't know if you've noticed this from Eovaldi, but he's evolving a little bit in his pitch repertoire where Absolutely. He's not the same guy. Like last year, he didn't throw a single slider, not one. He's essentially abandoned the cutter altogether. That was his number two pitch from 18 through last year, basically since he got to Boston. He's not throwing the cutter nearly as much, if not abandoning it altogether. And now he's going more curve slider, depending on if he's facing a righty or a lefty. So I think that these guys, and they did a segment on this on MLB Network. I don't know what pitcher they were breaking down, but they were saying something to the effect of, we've gotten too comfortable pitching to hitters' weaknesses versus pitching to pitchers' strengths.
Absolutely.
And when you're a guy like Eovaldi, you have 100 in the tank, let's up that fastball usage. Like, what are we doing dancing around with these other pitches when it's like you throw 100? Like, up the fastball usage. If you don't want to throw the cutter, don't throw it, and throw the slider. Like, why? Like he didn't throw a single slider last year. Now he's throwing it more, and you're seeing the results.
So, Jared, in all honesty, and we got to be quick here because we have a Bruins game coming up. But I like the way they're pitching overall. Their fastball percentage is way up. And you know what that tells me? They believe in the stuff of their pitchers. Mm-hmm. Last year, if you remember, curveball, curveball, curveball. All they did was throw curveballs. I feel like
Barnes specifically. I mean, yes. Barnes would have came into a game last year and been like curveball, curveball. And now he's pounding the zone with more strikes. Like they're just like, all right, if you're going to hit it, then hit it. But you need to catch up to 98 if you're going to do it.
No question. So look, it's been a good start, Jared. Even I'm happy. How do you like that?
I can't believe it. Let's see if it's sustainable, Tony.
All right. So listen, I know we typically talk about having you on Tuesdays. I know you got derailed yesterday. So we appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight. All right.
Happy to be here. We'll see you next week and see if the Red Sox are still in first place.
There you go.
Pick up your trivia game, will you?
I know. I stink.
There you go. Jared Carabas, Barstool Sports, joining us here on the Baseball Hour. Jim Murray's going to have your headlines here. And then a Bruins pregame coming up next with Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. They'll take you right up to the opening faceoff. Tuukka Rask's return against the Islanders tonight, followed by Celtics-Lakers right here on 98.5. It's a sports smorgasbord on 98.5 tonight. We'll see you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.